Welcome to the Andy Griffin Show.
Wake up!
With your chance to sound off, give your opinion, and tell us your thoughts. It's on.
It's now.
It's here. It's the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5, KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome to the program 909 on this toasty, toasty May. Yes, it's still May morning. It feels like August right now, but it's a May morning. I'm Andy Griffin, live from the Camping World of St. George Studios. Joining me today on Mayor Thursday, Nanette Billings from Hurricane City. Thank you, Nanette, for coming.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Andy.
Good to see you. A couple of things before we get rolling here. Again, that Armed Forces celebration out at the Western Sky Aviation Warbird Museum is going on today, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. So, yeah, you can stop by. And it's really cool. They have a couple of World War II vintage bombers that have been restored and are beautiful. Of course, they have their vintage fighter jets. In fact, Friday and Saturday, you can actually, if you want to pay for the gas, you can have them take you up in one of those vintage planes.
How exciting.
How awesome. Yeah, that is really cool. They're also going to have food vendors, display. If you don't want to pay the big money, you can get a tour inside the planes as well without it going up in the air. So much more. They honored the Cold War veterans yesterday. I thought that was really awesome. That day before is. Yesterday. And then, are you a dancer at all, Nanette? They have a big dance on Saturday night.
How fun.
Yeah, it's called the Hangar Dance. It's 6 o'clock. Really, the party gets rolling around 7, but 6 o'clock they have some dance lessons so you can learn to swing dance. And the Rebel Jazz Band will be there with live swing music. They encourage you to dress up in 1940s attire.
Sounds like a party.
Not required, so you don't have to. You can just go and dance, listen to music, and have some fun. They'll have refreshments. It's $20 in advance if you call right now, or $25 at the door. The phone number is 435-229-4985. And if you're a World War II or Korean War veteran, you and a guest get in absolutely free.
Sweet.
Very cool. You avoided my question. Are you a dancer? Do you like to dance? Or?
I do like to dance. Do you? I'm not a good dancer, but I like to dance.
You're not a Elaine Benes bad, are you?
I'll just say I'm not a dancer, but I like to dance.
Yeah, I've told the story before, but it's been a while. I got back from serving LDS mission. We're talking back in the late 80s, and I used to love to dance. I danced all the time. We had two non-alcoholic dance places in Salt Lake, Xenon and The Bay. And every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, I was there dancing the night away before my mission. Well, right after I got home, I knew this girl. Her name was Heidi. She invited me to come to a dance with her. It was like a church-sponsored dance. But we got out on the dance floor, and I think I'm doing pretty good, right? And I look over at Heidi, and she's kind of half laughing and just smiling at me. And I said, What's so funny? And she goes, well, you look like you haven't danced for 2 years. And I said, well, actually, I haven't danced for 2 years. And that was probably the last time I went dancing. So she didn't really hurt my feelings so much as I realized my time had passed. It was time to let other people dance a little more modern dance than me. And at various times, my daughters have tried to get me to dance, but then they see me and they say, no, you don't need to, Dad. You're good. So,
but it's fun to dance. I like to do it but I'm not
fun.
A dancer.
It
now.
Is fun. As much as I love music, I dance inside my head. That's probably the best
way
to do it.
Your heart. Okay.
We're talking Hurricane City today on the Andy Griffin Show. Hurricane growing like crazy, growing like a weed, however you want to term it. And Nanette, you said something again, and I kind of followed it up. And the fact is, the growth is coming. You can either embrace and prepare for it, or you can let it smack you upside the head. But there's really not a whole lot you can do about it, right?
Yeah. Well, people have a right to develop their property, and it's up to the council to make sure that if they're requesting zone changes, that they are being thoughtful with how that growth is coming in. Most of the growth, they've wanted to increase density. And the council, previously, they've approved that. Right now, we have a council that has been a little bit more leery in approving the growth. of density, I should say, not approving growth because people have that right to
develop. Yeah, if I own land, I can put, and it's residential, I can put a house on it. What you're saying is they want to maybe put a duplex or a fourplex or an apartment building.
Right.
And that does require an approval from the council.
Right. Tonight in our council meeting, we have two items on the agenda that are to add just in the downtown area from RM1 to RM3, which adds more units for like apartments, and there are already existing apartments, so there's already three on one lot and four on another that they're wanting to increase density right there in our downtown area, out in the field, some other homes being requested. And it's difficult when something's been agriculture,
right?
But people still have a right to develop their property and build a house. And this is this particular piece is a family is wanting to let their children that are moving back here or that live in our area and put the nine lots with the children and grandchildren to be able to build on half acre. And so some of those questions come up and people start feeling like they're being encroached on and that they don't want to have that development, but people have a right to develop their land and it's zoned that. So it's difficult to,
and I'm guessing if you say, all right, we'll let them subdivide their land and let their families build on it. Yes. The next guy that comes along that owns maybe a few acres next to it said, well, hey, you let them do it, so you should let me divide. It's not my family, but hey, they did it.
Well, as long as it's zoned that, I mean, it's usually been approved, and this is zoned for that. And so those are good questions, and you really do need to be consistent. I think it's important that for a council to be consistent. Two years ago, they were very consistent in approving every zone change, and right now they're not. And so I think that makes a difference. How they're, you know, I didn't vote for that, but that's just because I didn't feel like that. When you buy property, you know what you're buying, and your neighbor knows what you're buying, and so the neighbors know, oh, it's zoned this, and then they know what to expect with their own property. And so it's difficult if you have someone that comes in and says, I want to increase that, and that happens a lot. We have the increased density, not just to zone their property for whatever is zoned, and that's what's happening. When you have increased density is because they're saying, I want it.
Is there a designation if I wanted to buy a house with a casita or a mother-in-law apartment versus if I wanted to build a duplex? Is that differentiated in the law as far as zones?
Yeah, it is. And actually, our council, we are, it's up on the agenda right now for ADUs, accessory dwellings, and currently, you can have an accessory
dwelling would be like a casita.
You can have one of those right now, and in our ordinance, it specifies that you need to live in the main home.
Right.
The ordinance that's before us tonight is you can live in either. So if you want to rent out the main home and live in the accessory, you can. And it's also that you could build a second one on bigger than a 0.8 acre. So if you wanted to have one long-term, one short-term, you could. You couldn't have both short-term, but you could have both long-term. And that's one of the reasons that this ordinance has come up. We need to solve the problem for people to stay here and live here. People that can work here, we can't just have short term and not have a place for all the workers. The people that come here need somebody to help them and serve them at McDonald's and the gas station and drive the garbage truck and all of the take care of the parks, everything that has to be done. We have to have people that live here as well.
I find it fascinating, and I'm sure you've run into this in Hurricane as well as the rest of this county, is you have a situation where there's a place like a Wendy's or a McDonald's or a fast food place, they can't get enough workers for many reasons. One is, number one, like you said, sometimes the workers can't afford to move here. I think another reason, too, and maybe we screwed up a little bit as parents, and you and I are just a little bit past that now, but where we don't require our kids to get jobs when they're 15 or 16 years old. Now, my kids wanted to work because we didn't give them very much money. They wanted some spending money. But I know there are a lot of parents out there. In fact, my son would come home and, hey, I'm going to go out with so-and-so. I'm like, what are you guys going to do? Well, we're going to go this. I'm like, really? So who's buying? That sounds expensive. And, oh, I'm buying. Or we're just going Dutch. And I'll be like, okay, so does your friend have a job? And my son would say, no, his parents gave him the money. And I was just like, well, okay, all right then. But that seems to be the two of the major issues right there. We don't have anywhere for workers to live, and then parents not requiring young people. I mean, it used to be every McDonald's, every you know, malt barn or whatever was filled up with teenagers working the cash register and working the ice cream pump.
Sure. And I've talked to a gentleman the other day, one of my friends, and his son, I think, is 13. And he says, well, he can't get a job. And I said, well, that's because it's 14. They have to be 14.
Yeah.
But they can work in other places. They can. There's many things you can do on your own that are 13.
Sure.
But that's something that we have to consider. There's ages, and they have to be that age. But
I was mowing lawns at the age
right.
of 10, you know,
yes.
and doing things like that, babysitting even, because I wanted, well, you want money, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody was giving me any, that's for sure.
I remember cleaning houses, and my kids washed windows, and they'd go put up Christmas lights. Oh, they got very creative, chopped wood. They a lot of really good things that some people need, those services. And so when kids are willing to work, they can usually find a job.
I remember my 14-year-old, my son, when he was 14, my oldest said, I want to get a job, Dad. I want some more money. I said, you're 14. Come on. And he said, no, I want a job. I said, well, I guess if you can find one, good luck. He got on his bicycle, rode up Telegraph, and got a job at Sonic. And, you know, he had, with 14-year-olds, you have certain, you know, they can't work after dark. They can only work so many hours and stuff.
Sure.
But he went out and did it. And it was kind of like in your face, Dad. I got a job. And not only that, I get tips with the job. And I come home with two pocketfuls of cash.
Awesome.
Every day. So
with my kids, and I know there's a lot of families that do this with their own children. So my kids did not have jobs outside, like in the private or for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
They did their own business. And I had a son that
nice.
Four-wheeler repair, oil changes. And
that's really cool.
And
yeah.
other kids, I mean, I just felt like we wanted to, and so we didn't encourage our kids to go outside and get jobs. We encouraged them to think and find something that they were good at or that they could become good at with whatever it was, taking care of children or cleaning houses or washing windows. There's many things that they did. And in that Christmas tree, hanging lights and putting up decorations, that was a very lucrative business for my kids during Christmas time, for sure. So I think that they can be incentivized by recognizing their time's valuable and they only work when they want to. And the reason I didn't have my kids go get a job or encourage them to do that, I didn't want someone else dictating when we could go on vacation, when our family could spend time together.
Good point.
So I wanted to make sure that we were in control of that and that they could choose the hours they worked. And so we kind of went a different direction and encouraging our kids with getting, but they're all pretty, all of them are very, very skilled and taking care of themselves.
What did your son who did the four-wheeler repair end up doing for a living? What is
he's
doing
a lineman.
There? Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, I have a son like that. Really good with his hands.
Yeah.
Never really felt comfortable book learning. And I don't know. Book
There's
lineman,
a lot of learning on books,
but
with a lineman. You have to go through a lot of testing.
Yeah. But this son of mine was like, Dad, I want to do something where I'm doing something, where I'm working on something, where I'm taking something apart or putting it together or whatever. And so
he's
he
very much like that.
Didn't go to college, went to trade school, didn't go to college.
He went to trade school.
Now makes more money than I do by a long shot. So, hey, you said something to me that I was a little bit surprised at. You said Hurricane Airport, right? Great, you know, a great kind of side airport to SGU and a place for small planes to land, unless you come in after dark, because, folks, believe it or not, Hurricane Airport does not have any landing lights. There's no lights.
Right.
That's surprising. Are you? I mean, I guess you've known this for a while, but
my whole life.
Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that's going to change?
So when I was a child, there wasn't lights and it was a dirt airport. And I remember sometimes pilots, and we had friend, I remember Russell Lim, buzzing the city. And my dad drove out and shined his lights so that they could land.
Put his headlights on.
Oh, yeah. So they could see the. And there's many of the pilots that have been there long term. I know the Lemons, that they were out there with their planes. And there just have never been lights at night. And so they've had to figure out a couple of things. But it's against, from what I'm understanding by my research, it's against the law to just go put like a reflector or some kind of solar lights, that kind of thing, that you just can't do that. But yeah, the engineering was approved, and the lights were not approved this last council meeting about 2 weeks ago. So it's historically always never had, well, it's never had lights. Hmm. And it is the only airport in her, or in Utah, that does not have lights. And so there's PAPI lights where when the pilots come in, it levels them so they're not overshooting or undershooting the runway. And so for safety, it's really important even during the daytime that they use those lights. Hmm. In the evening, nighttime, of course, the landing lights make so they can see the airport. And so pilots, their concern is safety for their lives and wanting to make sure they can land safely. And up to this point, they've known we don't have lights, so they don't fly at night. We don't have landing. Very rarely do we have that. We've had a few accidents, too, that people have come in, flown at night, and not been safe. They've had accidents.
Oh, wow.
The citizens, they, especially citizens that live around or in the flight path or around the airport, it's probably split. Because some of them, of course, they look at it, well, we want to make sure that the pilots are safe. And the others, it's not that they don't want the pilots to be safe. They're just saying, well, you've never had landing lights, so should we have more noise at night? Hmm. And it probably comes down to SUU helicopters and the training schools that have come in. Because there hasn't been any negative feelings about the fixed-wing pilots that are coming in and out. Their noise, they take off and it's fine. It's the rotation and the training that comes where it's just circling the same areas over and over to have that continuous noise all day. And so they're thinking, well, if they're coming in the day, they're going to for sure come at night. And they do. They land in Beaver and Parowan and Cedar and St. George, and they do. Hmm. And so that was their concern, is we don't want people landing here all night long. And we're only 20 minutes from St. George. So people can land in St. George, and we don't have to have that airport to expand. And we don't have the room on the runway. Our runway is about 1,000 feet shorter than even the Grassy Meadows runway that's the private airport in Hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only like 3,400 feet. It's not very long. It's not a very long runway. And the width, they just barely widened the runway and then put the FAA, with the money that's been received since 2008, we became a NIPIUS airport, meaning that FAA comes in and we have a capital improvement plan, a CIP plan. Every year you put something else on there and then we save up money and the city pays 5%, UDOT pays 5%, and the FAA pays the other 90%. And so projects have come to improve the runway, to widen it, to fence it. So now this was just the next project with the lighting. They'd like to do a WASP and several other portions to be repaired. But during this process of the lighting, a lot of the citizens were upset and the pilots as well, upset and frustrated. And so it's been a really...
And you say this disagreement or differing opinions, it's pretty split at this point still?
Well, we had the vote, and so when you have a split vote, and I knew it was going to be really close, I had visited with some of the council members before, and so the council voted 3 council members not to approve the lights and 2 to approve the lights. And so you knew that, you can tell by the community and I received hundreds of emails.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I even printed them. I had an inch and a half just of emails from people in our community, one way or the other, of how they felt about it. So it's a pretty divisive topic.
So we know where Sky Ranch is. Where is the Hurricane City Airport?
On the way to Sky Ranch. Okay. So it's only about 2,000 south, right about there is where it starts, and it goes to about 2,400 or something.
All right. And for now, no lights.
Right now, no lights, and that was voted last council meeting. And, you know, the council, when they vote, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And I can't change it, and they can't change it. It's just citizens. Now, can it come back up on the agenda? It can. And I don't know the time frame on this. If you're changing a zone, it's a year. But something like this, I don't know what the time frame would be.
So it may be back.
It could come back. Soon. It could. Yeah. But right now, so there's a couple of questions. FAA, they they require this to be approved by the council, of course, because that's the way our council has it designed in the ordinance, that it has mm-hmm. to be approved that way. But the funding of the engineering, so that was paid for through COVID money, and normally it's paid through capital facilities money. So if it needs to be paid back, I don't know. But there's a lot of times you'll work on a project and you'll get to the engineering stand and go, never mind, that's not viable. And so you just don't do the project. But I don't know where we're at on that, and we'll kind of work and see what we need to do. But at this point, they we'll figure that part out.
It is, I'm guessing traffic's pretty light, though, at Hurricane Airport. Do you have a number? Do you have any idea how many planes use it?
Yeah, it's the third largest airport that's used in Utah. That, really? Probably 100 go in and out of there. Of any small airport that's not like Cedar City or St. George, Provo, or Salt Lake, you know, the major airports.
The ones with the U or an X behind them.
Exactly, yeah. Right. That's just a private airport. It's probably the most used.
Really? So, but not at night. At least it better not be, or you're gonna be in big trouble trying to use it at night.
Yeah.
Without lights. Interesting. How about the traffic at Sky Ranch? What did you call the meadows?
Grassy Meadows. Right, and it is Sky Ranch Airport, and it's private. And see, Hurricane was a private airport, so we did not have the funding through the FAA till 2008. And when it started receiving that funding, then it makes so FAA's in charge. Right now, Grassy Meadows are in charge of their own.
Right, because it's private.
It's private, so they can do what they want there.
Have any idea how much traffic they get?
Because all of them have their own hangars, it's just whoever lives there.
Hmm.
And you can't fly in there without permission because it's their runway.
Right. Yeah. It's private, yeah. Mm-hmm. How many houses are out at Sky Ranch?
Oh, I'm going to say
100?
I don't think quite 100.
Okay.
I think less than that. But as far as airplanes and hangars, there might be 40.
So not every house has a hangar?
Most houses do have a hangar, okay. Yeah. Hmm. And then there's also some hangars that aren't by the house, and they're some in their hangar, and then they just go get them from there and stay by their home.
If people don't know, if you haven't been out to Sky Ranch, don't know what it is, it's a unique subdivision where just about every house, a private community, that just about every house has a hangar. You can actually fly your airplane almost right into your house and, into your hangar there. And then if you want to, maybe your commute is to Vegas or to Provo or whatever. Yep. A lot of people choose to do it that way. They live here, get in their airplane, fly to wherever they want to go and work, and then fly back home.
Yes.
It's kind of a cool concept. Yeah. If you're a pilot, if you're not a pilot, seems kind of extraneous. Like, well, why would you do that? But if you're a pilot, seems like a pretty cool deal. Nana, I got to get a weather break in.
Okay.
We'll take a break. It's 9:32 on KDXU. We're talking Hurricane City. If you have questions for the mayor, we'd love to hear from you. 673-5890. We'll grab my phone and we'll take your text as well. Actually, I think I saw one on there. I'll have to unlock that as we go to weather. Hi, everybody. We're talking with Troy Paul from the Barbecue Pit Stop. The Barbecue Pit Stop is located at 180 North, 300 East. That's right behind Napa Auto Parts on the north side of the boulevard. Let's talk about different types of barbecue cookers. Now, I have a Yoder, a pellet smoker. I also have a pit barrel, which is charcoal. Mm-hmm. What else is out there, Troy?
Sure. Well, there are lots of different types. Most people are probably familiar with like a gas grill. This would be like your Weber or whatever it is. You have propane, maybe natural gas. That's what most people are familiar with and have used forever. Probably the most popular recently would be pellet cookers, and that would be like your Traeger. Camp Chef makes some great ones. Yoder, like what you use.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably the most popular now with smokers because they're so easy to use. Now we have different types, some other charcoal cookers that are out there. Each of them has a different good use. So if you want a gas grill, that's awesome, and we can supply those, and we've got some really excellent ones. If you want a pellet cooker, nobody has a better selection than we do or expertise on that. We are a Traeger Platinum dealer, and so if you're interested in pellet cookers, then we know them inside and out. But basically, gas is great for quick, convenience, hot, and fast cooking.
Mm-hmm.
if you want to smoke foods, then pellet cookers are really simple now as well, but they add so much more flavor. Now it tastes wood-fired as opposed to, gas-fired.
You're not going to get a burger in 20 minutes, but I'll tell you what you do get when you get it is pretty amazing.
Oh, man, it's so good. And they're just so easy now, too. They have them with Wi-Fi and all these different things, but they're incredible. If you're looking for just more information on that, come on into our store. We can talk you through it for sure.
So, Troy, let me ask you this. Does it matter which brand of pellets you get, or are they all the same?
It actually matters quite a bit, Andy.
Really?
Yeah, and they all look the same, and you think, oh, a pellet's a pellet. But the difference is the type of wood that they use is going to provide a different combustion. And so some of them are going to be more efficient. Some of them are going to just produce a lot of ash and not great flavor or consistency. Some of them can be harmful to your oven that you're cooking with. It'll start to jam the auger or different things. So you want to make sure that you have a good pellet that has a good wood base on it.
And the place to get those is at the Barbecue Pit Stop. It's 180 North, 300 East, right behind Napa Auto Parts on the north side of St. George Boulevard. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you, Andy.
Compelling guests, hot topics, the latest news. Always on the Andy Griffin Show.
Is there a juicy part in it for me?
Right here on News Radio 890, 92.5, KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the program, 937 on KDXU. We found out, we learned some things. We learned that Hurricane City Airport doesn't have lights.
Right.
And that's actually somewhat controversial, and it's not going to have lights in the near future. Maybe somewhere down the road it will, but not right now. So thank you for teaching us that. And, what are some of the – you keep talking about these long meetings and a lot of issues that people are upset or want their two bits about. What are the big issues right now? What are people fired up about in Hurricane?
So growth, of course.
Of course.
And changing zones, that's a big one, because within municipalities, most of the job is about the actual growth and changing of their property. Probably PIDs, PIDs, they were a big hot topic, and just a few months ago, we just both of the PIDs that were in the area passed a couple years ago. There were two, and then we had a couple others that just passed recently. And I struggle because I can see as I visit with developers how they collaborate and come together, but I'm concerned about the end user, which is the consumer. And at the end of the day, they pay the taxes on the rest of the development. And when a developer sells, they're going to sell at market. And they're going to get their full market, and they're not really going to discount that to say, oh, well, you know, you're going to have to pay the back end tax on this, so we'll just deduct that off of here. They're never doing that.
No way.
Never. And so I didn't vote for them in the beginning, and as a mayor, I didn't get to vote for them now. But that's when you're asking about controversial issues, trying to be neutral as the mayor to give everyone opportunities to put their case before the council, then I've had people that have been upset that I didn't take a stand on something and gave one person an opportunity and still gave the same opportunity over here, and they felt like, well, why didn't you take a stand or say something or not let them talk? And I said, everyone gets to speak here, and we all make sure we have the conversation. So
a lot of them are like, well, I'm right. You should let me have more time.
Yes, right. And I'm not doing that, so it makes people frustrated because I'm giving everyone the opportunity. And if you put the item on the agenda, you get 10 minutes. But if you're just coming in to make a comment about that, you get two. So the people that are only getting two are feeling like it's gypped. But you can have as many people as you want come and actually make that comment.
True.
But the person that's putting the item on the agenda needs to be able to explain their project and have that 10 minutes to explain that to the council and then let them ask questions and deliberate. So it's important to have the citizens' input, and they send lots of emails. I get a lot of that.
Inch and a half, just on one topic, yeah, right?
Right.
We talked a little bit with Washington City about this, and it may be not as big a factor with Hurricane City, but Senator Lee is putting together a legislation trying to get the feds to give us some of their land that we can develop for residential property. Now, Hurricane's a lot more geographically, a lot more expansive, and you may not even need some of that land like St. George or Washington City might. But has that bill that's going out there, does it affect you at all?
Only a very little, okay. Because most of our land within our community is already private.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have very little BLM adjacent.
Yeah. So not as big
not
a deal.
Big. Right. And then we have the special assessment area, which will never change, and that won't ever be part of that, which is the Sand Hollow special assessment. And by design, it will stay recreation forever. Thank you.
Yeah. So how far does that extend? Because there is development out there.
Yeah, there is. It's past Warner Valley, so it's pretty extensive.
Okay. I had Washington County School District on a few days ago, and we talked a lot about the fact that a big portion of the growth is out your way, and I speculated about names of a potential new STEM site or a new cone site rather,
right.
And it might be Dixie Springs High School or
right.
Sand Hollow High School or something like that. Have they contacted you? Is that something that you're saying this is not too far away?
It's not too far away. We have. I think that they will be building something within the next few years. Yeah.
Okay, and you don't know where at this point. Do they yeah. already own land?
They do. Sitla has land. Yeah.
Okay.
They do.
And it's do you know where? Like
I do, and it's open. Like if you get on Onyx Maps, you can see all the Sitla land that's okay. available.
And there's some in Sand Hollow. Uh-huh. Some in
yes, yeah. there is.
One of the plans in southern Utah with Washington County. I actually really like this. They keep building schools quicker because they want to keep school size smaller. We could, obviously, with the size of St. George and Washington and Hurricane, we could have a 3,500-student school, you know, a Bingham or one of those, you know, Farmington or Riverton. We could have a very large school here. And Washington County has decided, let's try to keep our students, keep them at maybe 1,400 or less.
Smaller class sizes, yeah, for sure. And they focused on that to help families. It really does help the teacher.
I went to Bingham as a freshman when we first moved to Utah from Texas. And it was weird. My mom went to check me in. I'm 14 years old, don't know a soul, right? My mom goes to check me in and register me for class. And it was while class was going, school year was going. And I just remember walking through the hallways with my mom, going to the office, and there was trash everywhere. And I was like, it's kind of weird. I don't see any people, but there's trash everywhere because class was in. And so my mom filled out all the paperwork, got me registered, and the teacher said, well, we're just about to come on, we're between classes. So you can just go ahead and hang out here for about 5 minutes. And then when the class is out, then you can go ahead to your first class. I was like, okay, 14 years old. My mom says, all right, I got to go to work, so I'm going to leave you here. And I'm like, all right. And then the bell rang, and the hallways were shoulder to shoulder. And we're talking big, giant hallways. And there were literally thousands of students. And I'm 14 and don't know one of them, not a single one of them. My mom had just left, and I have to admit, there was a moment of panic there for young Andy Griffin.
Sure.
Back in. And so I think the plan... And I eventually found my class, and they split Bingham High and made West Jordan, and everything worked out fine, right? I mean, I'm here today, right? But it was scary. And I think the plan to keep school size smaller, not just for the class size, but that's important, obviously, for the teachers, but to keep the school smaller, I think, is important. Now, Hurricane was like the smallest school in the region for a while.
Sure.
Hurricane is growing. Hurricane High School is growing. Do you know how many students right now are out there by chance?
I think 1,400.
Yeah.
That's a number that I've heard.
I think maybe 15 years ago it was like 800 or 700. So it's changed a lot.
It has. And they expanded the high school because of that, too.
Right.
But they do want to keep it smaller. And our district is really awesome because they recognize the importance. You know how the National School Board came out and said parents aren't the primary stakeholder in their children's future or their life. And
our state, domestic terrorists, right?
Exactly. And our state code with the legislators, they've written that parents are the primary stakeholder. And then we have our school district that has that's recognizing how important parents are to make sure that they are there. My husband Willie is running for the House, and as we've talked about this specifically, it's such an important issue that we are making sure that that remains within our state, that parents have that, they have that right to say how they want their child educated and their influence.
Books are in their library.
Oh, that's a huge issue. Yeah. I've just met with some parents that came into my office the other day about that, and the books in the library, there's not a rating. So they were talking about, how can we rate this? And so I ended up calling Dave Sterling, who's on the school board, and talking to him about this, and said, we need to come up with a system. Because if a parent has to sign a waiver saying my child can watch this PG movie in the school, but they can check out an X-rated book that has pornography in it, that just should not be allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny thing, because the book people, I don't even know what to call them. Book people say, hey, this is art. You cannot censor us. You can't rate us. You can't. But we heard that same thing from people who made music in the past.
Sure.
And we got a rating systems put together for music. Same with video games. Sure. Same with movies.
And it's necessary.
I don't believe it's a problem. It's not saying you can't have this. You can't watch this. It's so that you're aware that going in, hey, this book has some scenes in it. Even though it's written word, there are scenes in it that are not for the immature.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great idea. I really do.
Well, an education will always be about what's best for the student. It should be that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we have legislators that are legislating, who wants new laws? So we need to sometimes fix old, bad, outdated laws. And this is one of those. It's never been addressed, and it needs to be addressed. We have books in our system, in our schools, that they can check out electronically without anyone's knowledge. They're right here, handheld, and they are viewing pornography. And it's something that, where are they getting the pornography? From the school? That's really lame.
Yeah,
we have to make sure we fix that. Yeah. So it's not always bad to have legislation. So we have to recognize.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I read an editorial, I think it was in the Deseret News, maybe, I don't know. But it was about this very topic, and it was, look, we're not trying to ban books like, you know, Nazi, you know, in the 40s. Right. What we're trying to do is we're trying to, or 30s and 40s, and we're trying to make the books that are available
age appropriate.
That's exactly it. And no 9-year-old should be reading a Harlequin romance, you know, graphically describes intimate scenes. There's no need for that.
Yeah.
So. We're talking with Nanette Billings from Hurricane City, and let's get one more commercial break in. When we come back, we'll finish up with Nanette and take some of your phone calls and texts. I got a couple of texts here. We'll get to those. Stay with us. Welcome back to Mayor Thursday on the Andy Griffin Show. Nanette Billings, Hurricane City, with me today. Thank you again for coming in, Nanette.
Happy to be here. Thanks,
always Abby. A pleasure having you on the show. A couple of texts, both concerning growth, and I'm going to kind of summarize so we don't have to read the whole thing. But one person said the growth seems like it spread out, I guess is a good word for it. So spread out in Hurricane City. Hurricane is so big geographically. They want to know if the infrastructure is going to be able to handle the fact that, I mean, you go from, you know, east, west, south, north. Hurricane is so big.
It is. We have 54 square miles. It's a big area.
Yeah.
And currently, our infrastructure does not handle the growth, and we're working on that. It's something that is going to be improved throughout the decade. It's going to take that long to make sure that there's enough infrastructure in all of that area. However, I will say that Hurricane's no different than anywhere else that's been developed. We have smart people on it that are taking care of those things. And you look at Denver or LA or Phoenix or whatever, they started growing, and then you have to put good minds together and figure out how to help land owners receive the infrastructure so that they can take care of that impact and develop their property and live there.
Is the growth the room, you talk about the 54 square miles, is the growth such that it's almost, I don't want to say unlimited, but something that you, Hurricane could be really, really big in the future?
Oh, yeah. So we're about 22 to 23% built out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had about 600 building permits per year for the last couple of years. And we could have more than that. I mean, we have 17,000 lots that have been approved through preliminary plat. That could take a long time to actually develop.
We're talking maybe it's possible anyway. In 20 years, Hurricane could have 100,000 people.
Yeah, they could.
Wow.
So I talked to, like D.R. Horton. I met with Don Bean the other day, and mm-hmm. we were talking, and he said, we will still just do, and he named the amount of homes that they'll do per year. So even though they have this many lots, they're still going to do a few hundred. It's not going to be thousands in 1 year. It's going to be just whatever they can get through their system.
It's grow, but 30 not to out of
control. A few hundred, right? It's just a few hundred. They can't do more than that. There's not the workload or the workforce. There's just not the ability to do thousands all at one time. So it's going to take years to actually develop.
I've been impressed. Now, I lived in Hurricane for a few years, but if you take Santa Clara, you take Washington, even or Ivins, or they're all without St. George. They I don't think they can make it as far as having the things you need to make it as a community. You know, grocery sure. stores and gas stations and things like that. Hurricane seems to me as having been self-sufficient for as long as I can remember. You have everything you need in Hurricane. You don't have to go to St. George to get your groceries or to, I mean, Costco's nice, obviously. But is that true? And are there things maybe still missing from Hurricane that need to be there?
Oh, that's a good question. Of course, we would like more business there, because not just for the fact that businesses bring in that impact to help to fix infrastructure and to repair and maintain. So we want businesses for that purpose and so people can live and work there. But bringing in business makes so that it's convenient. You don't have to drive 15 or 20 minutes, not 20 miles
yeah.
to St. George to get what you need. But in other cities, people drive 20 miles to go grab what they need.
It's
and
true.
So
it's, well, we're pretty spoiled yeah, here.
We because, are very spoiled.
Because
for sure.
Even but if yes, you go to like Salt it. Lake, my son lives right now in Taylorsville. A grocery store is not 5 minutes away where he lives. It's, especially with the traffic, we're talking 20 minutes, half hour to get to, you know, maybe he wants to go to Home Depot. Well, guess what? There's not a Home Depot a block away or two blocks yeah. away. And there kind of is those types of places here in St. George or as well in Hurricane. We're running out of time, so I wanted to get to this question. Mayor, why did the city not prepare alternate routes to Sand Hollow for the growth? And then talk about Glampers Inn advertises 242 sites. Lakeside has 127 estate lots and other developments. So alternate routes, I guess, is the question.
Good question. So we do have a master plan, especially for our roadways and trails.
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends on who's developing. So the other portion of the land hasn't been developed. And roads are developed by developers, by people that want to have that. And when they're placing that impact is when roads are developed. So cities don't come in and just say, well, this person clear out here wants to have a road to their house. That
yeah,
means that they have
the to, city's not going to pay for
right?
that.
Right. And
yeah.
so when they come in and that road is created, then the city will maintain. And that's the way development takes care of itself.
So is it an issue right now? Is there, especially
it
with
is.
The,
it
with the growth?
Really, yeah, right. And in fact, from SR7, so SR7 came in,
mm-hmm.
but the city, the road to do the interchange and to get off and on SR7 from like Dixie Springs, Sand Hollow area, it would be a few million dollars.
Wow.
Several million.
So it's going to be a while before that's justifiable.
Right.
Okay.
And so as much as we want to help those people in that area, because there's really only one way in and out, or two ways in and out off of Floritech Road or off of that Sand Hollow Road, it really is tricky. But.
Okay. It's, again, we learned a lot today. The airport doesn't have lights. Someday it will, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We right now, I mean, there's the majority of the citizens that are there are saying no.
Somebody said we need a KFC in Hurricane, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that. Well, there's a new Jimmy John's coming in right there by Tropical Smoothie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting there. Jimmy John's. He's got a Subway. He's got a couple of Subways, right?
I could take number 6 about any time. I like the Jimmy John's.
Which one was that? The turkey?
Yeah. Yeah.
My wife's a sucker for a turkey sandwich, too.
The 6 or 4. I'm thinking it's a 6, but yeah, they have good food.
Nanette, thanks for coming in. We're going to have Nanette on once a week, once a month, not once a week. That would be a lot of pressure. Once a month here on the Andy Griffin Show. You've been delightful as always. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
This is the Andy Griffin Show. I'm here every day, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. And, of course, we'll take your calls tomorrow looking for some interesting viewpoints. We'll hear from Mike Lee for about 5 minutes, and we'll hear from you. Thanks for listening today.